The Republicans are featuring a lot of moderate speakers at their convention this week. When the Democrats did the same thing last month, the speakers were described more often as centrists. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg talks about the curious differences in the language we use to describe the two parties.
By their uniforms, you shall know them. The New York Times' Damian Cave begins an article on the Republican convention by saying, "They're finally here, the Republican delegates in their rep ties." Daniel Perez, the editor of Details magazine, explains why he's leaving the city for the duration. "I don't want to see a lot of bad Men's Warehouse suits and a lot of badly parted hair walking around my neighborhood." New York Magazine offers tips to women conventioneers on where to buy coordinated skirt suits and high-end hairspray. And the Weekly Standard's Mark Labash worries that in New York, Republicans will stand out like good humor men in their summer weight khaki suits. Unfair or not, those dress stereotypes have a long history. The phrase "white shoe Republicans" goes back to the Reagan years. Or you think of the Checkers speech that Richard Nixon gave during the 1952 campaign when he famously referred to his wife Pat's respectable Republican cloth coat. What's curious is that people don't pigeonhole the Democrats that way. Liberals, yes, with their Volvos, lattes, and Birkenstocks. But the Democratic Party in general gets a sartorial pass. The picture of a Republican uniform reflects a wider perception of the party's uniformity, not just in appearance, but in ideology. It's a difference that shows up in the words we use to describe the parties. When the Republicans wanted to put a compassionate face on their party for the convention, they decided to feature speakers like Rudy Giuliani, Arnold Schwarzenegger, George Pataki, and Michael Bloomberg. That pretty much mirrors the strategy the Democrats adopted at their convention when they tried to appeal to swing voters with speakers like Senator John Breaux of Louisiana and Barack Obama of Illinois. The difference is that the Republican speakers tended to be called moderates, whereas the Democrats are called centrists. In fact, when politicians are described as centrists, the odds are around 4-1 they're Democrats. When they're described as moderates, the odds are 4-1 they're Republicans. That's part of a general pattern. People tend to place Democrats relative to the broad political spectrum, and Republicans relative to their party. In press stories, for example, the phrase "mainstream Republican" is 3 times more common than "mainstream Democrat" is. Those discrepancies are a fairly recent development. The phrase "moderate Republican" didn't become common until the 1964 election. At the time, it implied a contrast with the extremist label that Democrats were trying to pin on Barry Goldwater and his supporters. But the phrase persisted even after conservative Republicanism became respectable in the Reagan era. When Tom DeLay jokes about how many moderates the Republican Party has, he obviously isn't contrasting moderates with radicals or extremists. Nowadays, being a moderate Republican is usually a matter of what position you take on social issues, or sometimes just a matter of tone. Moderate Republicans are like other Republicans, only less intense about it. The triumph of moderate Republican owes a lot to the near disappearance of the phrase "liberal Republican," which is about 80% less common in the press than it was in Goldwater's day. That's partly a result of the party's general drift to the right. But the fact is that a lot of the speakers who were featured at the convention would probably have been described as liberal Republicans in the 1960s. Since then, though, the polarization of political life has been turning the L word into an absolute rather than a relative term. Nowadays, Republicans like Pataki and Bloomberg wouldn't own up to being a liberal anything, no more than they'd acknowledge Nelson Rockefeller or John Lindsay as their spiritual ancestors. Ever since the Reagan years, though, we've been describing the two parties according to different sets of coordinates. We define Republicans relative to the party constellation. We define Democrats according to their distance from the political horizons. That reflects the view of Republicans as having a dominant ideology, which defines the party's center and periphery. We have a word Republicanism, after all, but there's no word Democratism. For that matter, Republicans are far more likely than Democrats to be described as true believers or the party faithful. That language suggests that the Republicans are a movement, whereas the Democrats are a confluence of currents with no discernible mainstream. As Will Rogers once said, "I belong to no organized party, I'm a Democrat." This isn't to say that people don't perceive the Democrats as standing for anything nowadays. Compassionate conservatism or no, words like caring and fairness are still more likely to come up in connection with Democrats. But that's a question of common attitudes and values rather than of a political program. Despite all the efforts of the right to make Democrats synonymous with liberal, people don't associate the party with a dominant philosophical system. Those differences are natural enough given the Republicans' fabled party discipline and the Democrats' equally fabled fractiousness compounded by all those years out of power. But the perception of the Republicans' overriding ideological unity may make it hard for them to persuade undecided voters that people like Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger are the real embodiments of the party's soul. Not with all those qualifying adjectives slung around their necks, and certainly not in those fabulous suits.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and the author of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times.